Hello and good evening. I'm Claire, a member of the QuickBots of Ohio. We were runners-up in the first Global Innovation Awards in the City Shaper season and participants in Into Orbit. Welcome to the eighth episode in our first Innovation Challenge presented by Qualcomm Expert Education Series. This series is designed uniquely for first teams participating in the first Innovation Challenge and will bring you the tips and advice to help you succeed in the challenge.
And I'm Joshua, also from the QuickBot. Tonight we focus on a subject so critical to innovation, but that you might not know a lot about: intellectual property. What is it? Why is it important? And how is it part of the innovation ecosystem? We are so lucky. Tonight we have the preeminent go-to experts with us, the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and our presenting sponsor, Qualcomm, who, and this is incredible, has received approximately 140,000 patents to date. Through their Invent Together campaign, their participation in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office's initiative, the National Council for Expanding American Innovation, of which they are a member, and of course, their sponsorship of FIRST, Qualcomm is committed to assisting our next generation of inventors and innovators. Welcome to both organizations. Let's meet our experts.
Please welcome Valencia Martin Wallace, Deputy Commissioner for Patents and the Executive Lead for the National Council for Expanding American Innovation from the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Ms. Martin Wallace has had a 28-year career at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, where she has overseen operations and the implementation of the First Inventor to File statutory framework. Currently, she manages and leads the patent organization's efforts related to international intellectual property harmonization and oversees patent examining functions in technology centers that examine the technologies of communication, mechanical engineering, manufacturing, and medical devices and processes and design.
Next, let's welcome Susie Armstrong, Senior Vice President of Engineering, as well as Sarah Stray, Innovation Awards Manager of FIRST, who will moderate tonight's conversation. Susie was a pioneer in bringing internet protocols to the cellular industry, resulting in the first web surfing on a cellular phone in 1997, and Qualcomm's commercialization of packet data in 1998. Since then, she has held various leadership positions, first responsible for the development and commercialization of the software that drives Qualcomm's chipsets, and then as the head of the worldwide customer engineering. She is also a member of the FIRST Executive Advisory Board. Welcome, Susie.
Mute button. Thank you, Joshua, and thank you, Claire. We are really excited to be here talking about innovation, and especially with folks like Valencia and also with the two of you. Speaking of the two of you, you are no strangers to innovation in the patenting process. I'd like to point out that last May, your team received a utility patent for your water filtration system designed from the first LEGO League innovation project in the hydrodynamic season. I'm completely impressed, and I'm always really impressed to see what the various first teams come up with, even at an age quite a bit younger than mine.
And thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here with you, Joshua and Claire, and to be with all of our participants, to be with such a great group of excited, interested inventors and creators is always a joy and very entertaining. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today and with our fellow panelist, Susie.
All right, thank you. And we can't wait to get this conversation started. Today, we'll spend some time talking about intellectual property and the innovation ecosystem, hear from our experts through examples of some of these innovations, and engage with the members of the audience with some polling questions. We will end with a 10-minute question and answer session. You can submit your question by clicking on the question icon during any time of the presentation. We will try to answer as many questions as we can. To get us started, and for our audience who might not know a lot about this topic, Valencia, can you tell us, what is intellectual property, otherwise known as IP?
Absolutely. Thanks, Joshua. Intellectual property are the creations of the mind. So thinking inventions, literary and artistic works, symbols, names, and images that are all used in commerce are intellectual property.
All right, and what are the requirements of getting a patent?
So, you know, the main thing to remember in order to get a patent, your invention must be new, or in other words, not already exist. So that can mean either something that no one has ever done before, or something that is not an obvious change to something that's been done. It must do something, and that's what I mentioned before, utility. So we call this a utility patent. It, and as I mentioned, it can't be an obvious change. For example, if you change the color of something, you'll probably have a hard time getting a patent for that. And if you tune in on March 30th for the USPTO IP workshop, you'll learn more about what we consider obvious. There's an important topic that I want to address, and that's age that's required in order to get a patent. Well, the good news is there is no age requirement in order to get a patent. Anyone who has a creative invention that no one has ever done before and can present that to the patent office will be able to get a patent. There's no age requirement, and that's important for everyone to remember. You're eligible to apply for a patent. You just need to use creativity, ingenuity to find and solve problems. And last, patents are not always about the latest and greatest high-tech products. Sometimes the simplest things are worthy of a patent. So consider, for example, in daily life, a toothbrush or a clothespin. If you create a new, something no one has ever done before, you can get a patent. So now I have a question for Susie, if Susie doesn't mind. So what do you have a patent on?
I have a patent on a mechanism for connecting your cell phone to the internet. And that is actually, my husband says I created all of these zombies, all of us zombies, texting at the top of the escalator, because it in the late 90s, I was working, my background is in computer communications, you know, Ethernet and wired communications, and I was working at Qualcomm, and I made the observation that the voice link, you know, cell phones were for talking then, and the voice link was, you know, just a digital link. And so I created a simple way to basically trick the base station into bringing up an internet call. And we surfed the net on this at 14.4 kilobits a second, which is very, very slow compared, but we were thrilled. It's on this little flip phone, which is out of my DC office, which I don't have, but it had a screen about 1 inch in diameter. And we showed it at the big trade show. And within a year, it was starting to be commercially deployed in various places. And so, you know, I think that's it's a very satisfying story to know that you've had a little bit, you've had a zombie impact on the world. But really, part of the most satisfying thing about it, and one of the points I want to make is, you know, a lot of people think that patents are, you know, done by, you know, Edison, you know, sitting in his garage and having that light bulb moment and such. But actually, as QuickBots knows as well, Joshua and Claire know as well, patents are often more often a collaboration. And so, you know, in Qualcomm, we are a company of innovators around the whole communication. And so these ideas, even though you think they may not be, you know, like inventing the light bulb, these ideas that people have are often patentable, and it's really important to patent them. And that's the other point I wanted to make, is a lot of people think that patents are only to protect your invention, so nobody else can copy it. But if you look at it, it's actually a way to share your invention, to still protect your property rights, but to be able to have that protection so that you can share it with the world. So, you know, we didn't, you know, say, okay, you know, packet data and connecting your phone to the internet is Qualcomm's all Qualcomm's. You know, we share those kinds of patents so that other people can, you know, adhere to those standards and other people can create this broad ecosystem. So I think that's a really important, both the collaboration and the fact that patents are a way to not only protect, but to safely share your inventions, I think is a really important point.
If we can, I'd love to chime in and give the QuickBots a moment to talk and ask them. Susie, maybe you can draw out from them what their story is a little bit with their intellectual property.
Yes, because I really want you to share your patent with the world and create these water filtration systems. So can you tell us about your patent and what it's about and what the process was and how you guys learned about patents and decided to create one?
I think myself, as a lot of other people as well, knew what like the basic idea of a patent was long before joining a Lego team. But I didn't know all the details of how an inventor could obtain a patent until I actually went through the process myself for filing a patent on our solution.
So, you know, I'm curious also, Joshua, when your team was working on the water filtration invention and thinking about possibly getting a patent, at the time, did you think about, you know, you're participating in this process in the same way that famous inventors and Fortune 500 companies have participated for hundreds of years?
Not at all. We were just a first year team, so our focus was just to have a project in order to compete. We didn't really think we had anything special, nor even thinking that we were participating in the same process that inventors and Fortune 500 companies have been doing. At our district competition, it was like a complete surprise when we won the top project prize, the Innovative Solution Award. And even though we were thrilled to be recognized for our unique solution, applying for a patent still wasn't on our radar yet. So we didn't really file for it until, or really start filing for it until after the state championship.
And just, can you, when we were doing some prep, you mentioned that, you know, you filed and you didn't immediately get that patent. Can you just briefly tell us that story of how you tried again?
It was one of our challenges. We actually worked with a law firm, and we were disappointed that after the first rejection, but we were working with our attorney, submitted a response, and then it got rejected again. And we were kind of afraid that our chance of receiving a patent was kind of slim, but we responded again. And then our patent attorney scheduled an interview with an examiner. And as you can guess, we were nervous. But our coach and our attorney reminded us that this was our project. We knew it better than anyone else, and we just needed to believe in ourselves and our invention and explain it to the examiner.
Yeah, and then I remember how nervous we were at the interview, but when we were done, we were so excited that the examiner finally understood our invention. And so let's talk further about how intellectual property is part of innovation, innovative ecosystem. So Claire, let's talk about why we decided to patent our water filtration system.
Our patent invention was for humanitarian efforts because so many people were lacking clean water. Our initial conversation as a team, we didn't really think that there were any reason to patent our filtration system because it wasn't for profit. But we met with a business and marketing expert. He explained the importance of a patent, even for nonprofit organizations. And like Susie mentioned, we realized that a patent wouldn't just protect our idea, but would also give people access to our idea and help even more people.
And you know, I think many people just don't realize that as part of the deal, when you receive a patent from the US government, you're saying that it's okay to disclose or share your invention with others. So you're protected for your invention, but you also share it with others. And the USPTO turns around and shares the information with the world. It becomes free, publicly available information for anyone who's curious to search for it and find it on the internet. Then they can learn, they can be inspired by it, they can improve it, and they can make it better or different. Patents compile the richest library in the world. It's all free to look up. If you don't apply for a patent, then the innovation doesn't become part of the library. So you think about your favorite inventions, how it first looked, it worked, and how it looks and works now. And it's probably not the same. You can track or follow the improvements of the invention in the patent library, or as we call it, a patent database, which can be searched across the entire world. So at libraries, you can check out a lot of books. Well, it's the same. You don't have to be an inventor to search for patents and learn from them. It's for the public. But once you do learn from patents, chances are you're going to be inspired. And you want to get your patent to leave behind the library for others to find, and hopefully to inspire them as well. With practice, searching for patents becomes easier. And there's online tools that can help you do that.
Yeah, we did a lot of research on water filtration systems when we were coming up with designs for our projects. And this helped us figure out what was important to include in our final design. For example, keeping the system simple, making sure it had a large enough volume, and timing how long it took to filter the water. During the patent process, we used the patent library to make sure our invention was useful, novel, or unique, and non-obvious. And also, I'm curious about how big companies like Qualcomm think about their patents.
Okay, now you got me started. So I talked before about a really key point is that patents are not just about protection, they're about sharing those. And so in communications, you know, if you've got your cell phone needs to talk to a base station, or otherwise it's just a chunk of glass and metal and silicon and software. So patents are really inherently important in communications. And for example, our founder, way back in the 80s, he did some very fundamental research and very risky research into systems that communication systems that had more capacity than the existing ones and could carry more data and could carry that data faster. And that was called a system called CDMA, Code Division Multiple Access. And it was sort of the genesis for all the systems we use today, including, you've probably all heard about 5G. And so, you know, the fact that he and a group of founders and a group of researchers put all this effort into coming up with these inventions that made this kind of communication fast and efficient and workable. And then he patented them, a lot of that work, and he shared it with the world. And so, especially in communications, you've got to be able to share it with the world, or, you know, Ericsson can't build a base station, and, you know, Apple can't figure out how to use, you know, make a camera out of your chipset. So I think the way the big companies look at patents is, again, a way to share their ideas with the world, but still be able to protect them. Qualcomm is a company, because we are an innovative company and we have a lot of patents, we also, the research and the R&D and the innovation that goes into making those patents is really risky. I've worked on projects that we had no idea if they'd work or not. Some of them did not work. And so it's really important. We actually license our patents to other companies. It's really important to get that revenue stream also to plow back into the R&D that comes up with the next generation of patents and the next generation of communication systems, you know, from 5G, from 4G to 5G to 6G. So it's both, big companies look at it as both a way to have ongoing, a revenue stream for ongoing research and to, you know, share these inventions with the world and the community. So now, I've always wanted to ask a member of the United States Patent and Trade Office, do you have a favorite patent? It's probably not mine. do you have a favorite patent?
Thanks, Susie. Actually, you know, it's not far off, actually. So I do have a favorite invention, and it's something that's shared by quite a few, similar to what you're saying. So Dr. Marion Croak is known as the pioneer in the advancement of voice over internet protocol, allowing for phone calls over the internet, allowing for things like what we're doing right now. And as Susie was just mentioning, she was the pioneer, but over the years, others have created, improved upon to the systems that we see today. The fact that we can be all over the country and still be in this conversation right now. The fact that all of us on this call and panelists are in different areas, yet we still have this this communication, this connection. We can learn from each other because of it. And it started with Dr. Marion Croak, who actually has over 200 patents and has over 100 right now that are filed waiting to be examined as well, inventions. And I'll just share one more. Beulah Louise Henry, she is known as the Lady Edison. She has 49 patents her name, some of them for sewing machines, for ice cream machines. So every day, she loved inventing everyday useful things. And really important thing about her is she wasn't an engineer. She was just a creator. She was an inventor. And I say just, but it's not just. She's a creator. She's an inventor. So it could be anyone that has this creative mind. And if you can think it, then you can create it and invent it. So, you know, I also wanted to share something that hopefully you already know. But in case you don't, USPTO is here to help individuals to get patents and trademarks. That's what we do. We educate and inform people about intellectual property, what it is, how it's made, how you can protect it, and so many other resources with us and that we also help others with. So our goal is to help people and help innovation succeed at all levels of society. You may have heard the saying, knowledge is power. Well, there's a lot of truth to that statement. We help provide knowledge of intellectual property, and with that newly acquired knowledge, you now have new tools for your own knowledge toolbox. Knowledge about patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets, even more. And you don't need to use the IP tools every day, but they will be there when your inner inventor is sparked and your creative juices are flowing. You'll remember what you learned from the USPTO, and those are the tools that will stick with you for life. Anyone who can create it, as I said, if you can think about it and you can create it, you can get an invention for it.
Is there anybody named have an invention for it in the audience?
So, you know, the USPTO has several programs that with the goal of making patents broadly accessible, you see some links going up in the chat box now. If you do want to submit an application to apply for a patent, you're not on your own. We have a few different programs to help you with your patent and trademark filing questions. Some, if you qualify, will even help you draft and submit the applications for you. The programs include our patents pro bono program, which is attorneys who volunteer to help inventors to send their patent applications through the process. We have law school certification clinics. There's the Patent Pro Se Assistance Center. So that's a center for inventors who don't want an agent or attorney, but want to prosecute the case through the office themselves. And we also have a Trademark Assistance Center. So Joshua, on your team, were you all engineers working on the invention?
Well, as a first year team, I was in fifth grade, the youngest member was in fourth, and the oldest was in seventh grade. And so we didn't really think of ourselves as engineers. We saw ourselves more of as, you know, musicians, athletes, actors, and all of those.
Yeah, well, I think of myself as more of a musician and artist. So I really liked working on the presentation boards and stuff like that for our competitions. And I really didn't think of myself as like an engineer.
Yeah, so but that's what made our team much stronger. Each of us are, you know, creators in our own way. And when we brought all of our shared different ideas to the meetings, we were able to come up with a good and unique invention.
Absolutely. And that's what it takes, creative minds. So it doesn't matter what you think you might be, or a label put on yourself as an engineer or a scientist, it doesn't matter. We're all creators. So if we're all creators, then we all can invent, and we can all have a patent on what we invent. Now, people are surprised to hear that the most successful invention teams have individuals from all different backgrounds and expertise, just like you. It's not just all engineers. There's no limit on the type of people who can join the innovation ecosystem. Anyone can invent. Remember, you don't have to be an engineer or affiliated with a specific profession to obtain a patent. All that's needed is the will to go out into the world, into your own communities, and look for those problems that exist, those things that can be improved upon, and use your creativity and ingenuity to find solutions to help other people. In the process, you just might add a patent or two with your name on it into the patent library.
Yeah, definitely. And besides engineering and technology, what are some other industries that are making strides with innovation right now?
Well, you know, today with recent advances in science, technology, legal protections provided to companies by IP system, there's more than 400 vaccines for COVID-19 in human trials around the world. There's advanced medicine, biotechnology, instant communication like what we have right now, human flight, artificial intelligence, going to the moon in a deep space is commonplace now. Today, as we speak, we're at the cusp of an entirely new era of technological development. We see this every day at the United States Patent and Trademark Office, where once discrete scientific disciplines are merging and creating entirely new inventions, new products, new processes, and new industries. We are on the cusp of unbelievable growth with massive developments taking place in areas such as 5G, nanotechnology, biotechnology, personalized medicine, quantum computing, big data, and so much more. There's a revolutionary technologies that are creating entirely new industries, new jobs, new ways of living, and a new hope for mankind.
And I'd just like to add that, you know, Qualcomm is a company of inventors and engineers and scientists and such, and we are not, you know, necessarily vaccine researchers and such, but it's really, I think it, Valencia makes an incredibly good point that, you know, we hear a lot about tech and a lot about tech patents and such, but she makes a really good point that these are people, you know, inventors that make the world go round are people who have creative ideas from any background and who are willing to pursue those ideas and work with others and bring them to life and protect them in the form of a patent. And that's why, again, I'm so impressed with the QuickBots team, with the youngest, you know, team member being in the fourth grade at the time, because, you know, none of you folks are engineers either. So the other thing is, at a company like Qualcomm, and this I think goes for big organizations and small organizations in the Patent and Trade Office, is it's really important that we do whatever we can to get everybody patenting, not just men engineers. You know, yesterday was International Women's Day, and so I think this month, but the whole month, is International Women's Month. And so I think there's, and research shows that inventions and project teams that invent are much stronger and come up with much more creative ideas when they're diverse teams, when they've got women and people of color on them. So that's something that we treat very carefully, very importantly in Qualcomm's culture. We have actually an internal initiative, both internal and external, called Invent Together, which is specifically meant to bring out people from different socioeconomic backgrounds and different genders and make sure that we include them in the patenting process. And, you know, it's partially because it's the right thing to do, but it's also partially an economic imperative. A company like Qualcomm cannot afford to leave any good idea on the table. And so I think that's a really important piece of on this International Women's Month to actually recognize here. And again, just in support of, you know, what Valencia was talking about as well, you don't have to be an engineer. So many of our patents on our big patent wall, you know, they're created by, you know, product managers and test people and lawyers and, you know, these cross-functional teams. Just like QuickBots.
Yeah, and that sounds a lot like how first coaches and mentors encourage team members. I know on our team, our coaches always told us, put your ideas out there, even if we think it's a bad idea, because good ideas have to start from somewhere. And, you know, by participating in the first innovation challenge, you are all participating in the innovation process.
Yeah, we always had this inside joke whenever we came up with an idea. I have a really bad idea. It's like the first thing we'd say. But let's take a few questions from the audience. And just a reminder that today we're talking about the role of intellectual property in the innovation ecosystem. So while no topics have limits for questions, we do have another webinar upcoming with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. They will go over in more detail how to patent the ideas, turn into inventions, and talk through those steps. The webinar will be on March 30th, 2021 at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And let's start with our questions. So, would changing the mechanics of a product, but not the look of a product, breach the rules of a patent?
So I'm sorry, could you just, Claire, say that one more time?
Oh, yeah. Would changing the mechanics of a product, but not the look of a product, breach the rules of a patent?
No, I can't say that. I would say that's one of the first things that you really have to look to is with the mechanics. It's if you change mechanics, that's a really good start. But as you do your search to see what else is out there, it can kind of tell you, is this something that someone else has done? Or you have to ask yourself, well, would this be an obvious change to someone else's invention? And if your answer to that is no, it's not, it would not be obvious to do that, then you should, you know, really keep pursuing it, because that's new, novel, and that deserves a patent.
Okay. What is the difference between a trademark and a patent, and how would you decide when to choose between them?
So for a patent, you can get it for something that does something like the utility, or if it's for a design. So let's say a car, you can get a patent for the utility of a car if it's brand new, how it runs, but also the design of it, what the actual look of that car is. That's a patent also. Or for plants, if you have a new type of plant that is brand new and has never been done before. With the trademark is really it's the image as well as the words that go along with that image. So let's think of something like IBM. And every time you see IBM, you see those block letters and you see those lines and particular colors. Well, they can get a trademark on that saying, this is our particular logo, therefore no one else can use it.
All right.
These are great questions. I'm in learn mode.
Okay. Well, this might be jumping ahead a bit, but there's a question. Is there going to be a discussion on finding existing IP which may already exist?
I don't think that's for this. Will there be another session that goes more into searching?
Yes, I would say that's more of a question to hold for the 30th.
Okay.
Here's one. How much does it cost to apply for a patent?
Wow, that's a great question. So I unfortunately don't have the exact numbers with me, but there are different categories. So for big businesses, it'll cost a few thousand dollars. But if you're a small business or called a small entity, or an even smaller business than that, a micro entity, the cost goes way down. So it depends on really how big it, do you have a business? Are you an independent inventor? What your salary is? So the USPTO changes the fees and brings the fees down, especially for first-time inventors, small inventors, to make it a lot easier to go through the system.
Yeah, and if I could just add, I think there's so much interest in helping young people and diverse people file patents. There's a lot of organizations out there, you know, who will do, you know, there's actually lawyers who will do, you know, pro bono or free work to help along, you know, to help along some young people or some diverse people to file patents. It's really, you know, it's a lot of it is connected to the wonderful programs that are out there in the US and the world for STEM and such. And so never underestimate the power of energetic young people, or as Josh and Claire says, energetic kids in getting adults to help them. The very fact that you're interested in patents and invention and innovation, people want to help you. So, you know, ask those questions, ask your first mentors, ask every adult you find, ask Valencia, ask us on these kinds of webinars, because there's a lot of support out there for this kind of thing in the community.
Absolutely, right. Susie, you make a really good point there. One of the programs I mentioned was the pro bono program. So that way you get a patent attorney who will help you to prosecute your case, and they don't take any money for that, which is huge. And as Susie mentioned, there are a lot of different programs out there to help support small inventors.
And just to chime in, I'm not sure if anybody saw, but we have another United States Patent and Trademark person in the background as an organizer named Juan with the Office of Education and Outreach. And he's been putting up the answer to how much it costs and giving some tips to the whole audience as we go through. So thank you, Juan.
Thank you, Juan.
All right. Here's another one. And it asks, Does a patent in the U.S. extend to other countries and vice versa? For example, have a patent in Canada. Is the patent protected in the U.S. and around the world?
You know, that's a really great question. So if you get a patent in the United States from the USPTO, it is only protected in the United States. If you want to get the same type of patent protection in another country, then you would have to file in that country. So you would have to file a separate patent application in Canada or in Europe or in Australia if you want to be able to protect your rights in that country. But we also have international types of patents where it helps you so that when you file with them, you can use that same date, because it's really important to file your patent as soon as your patent application as soon as possible. So the international types of applications allow you to file there and still use that filing date in other countries.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. How long does it take to complete the patent process?
Wow. So now you guys have really smart questions. I really am enjoying this. It really depends. So there are over 8,000 patent examiners that are dedicated to examining the applications. But some areas get more applications than others. So it really depends. I think it's on average about a year and a half that would take to get to the examination process. But depending on what technology you're in and how many other applications are in that technology really determine how long it will take. But once you get it, you have 20 years that you have protection for your patent.
Yeah, and for our team, since we started at the end of the hydrodynamic season, which was, I believe,
summer of 2018.
Summer of 2018. And we got it in the middle of 2020, I think. So for us, it was like 3 or 4 years to get our patent filed. Yeah.
It really depends if it's a technology in an area that's a really popular area of technology, it could take a lot longer than in others. That's why when you file your application, it's really good to make sure that you have everything you need in the application up front, so that things that they call informalities aren't going to stop the application from going to the examiner and kind of put off the time that before they can get to it.
Yeah. All right. So what advice do you have for a student wanting to engage in career conversations with their mentors?
I can start in on that. As I said before, there is not a better time to be a student, I think, because there's so much interest in both the United States and the world in bringing up the next generation of inventors and innovators and patenters and you know, talented, creative people. So, I think, again, any person, basically all of my mentors have never really known that they've been my mentors. You don't have to be involved in a formal program, but talk to your first coaches, talk to your teachers, talk to your parents, talk to your parents' friends. Parents' friends are really interesting, and they're often very available to invest in you about what you might want to do in different careers that are out there. And my last piece of advice is don't think you have to know exactly what you're going to do when you're 25 and 35 and 45. I won't go on. Because if you build a good educational background in anything, and you build that background, and you go to college in whatever, your paths will change. I mean, you're going to be in the workforce inventing and such for, I don't know, like 60 years or something. And your paths will change. So, you know, certainly pursue and talk to different people about what a career is going to be like in such and such a field, but don't get hooked on that's, unless you want to, you know, I want to be an astronaut, but be open to opportunities that come up. When I was in high school, I wanted badly to be a veterinarian, and I toured the Primate Research Center at UC Davis and realized I could not face sort of the pain and suffering, and computers didn't like cry when you hurt them. but I guess the point is build the background and talk to everybody you know, because everybody out there wants to help you. You are in a really good position.
Now I agree completely with Susie. Just read as much as you can about everything, you know. Understand the world in front of you, and there's so many different possibilities, and you have so many interests. As Claire and Joshua told us before, you know, they weren't thinking they were engineers. Their interests are everywhere, and that's the advice I would give you as well, especially as you're younger and before you really need to make those decisions. Understand everything around you and what interests you, so that you can really, you know, have a great decisions ahead of you, knowing what you really like.
Yeah. And so this is probably gonna be your last question, but as we were saying, it took about 2 years to get our patent. But is there like an easy way to get a patent, or the first steps to getting a patent?
You know, so I mentioned, you know, as you file the application, just make sure that you really are very careful to file it the way you should, to have all the information there, to be very descriptive about the background, the history of the technology that you're pursuing, as well as the description about your particular invention, as well as you claim your invention, be very careful about making sure that you're claiming it broad enough that you're not overly narrowing what will be considered your patent, but still not infringing, not harming anyone else's patents. And it's kind of tricky. It takes some time to put that application together. So I would start there. And I think you guys, what you were saying is just exactly what you're supposed to do. You know, majority of applicants get a rejection. And that rejection really is just saying from the examiner, hey, here are some of the things that you might need to just claim a little bit different or describe better so that we can see how it's different from these other patents. And you went and you had that conversation with the examiner and you let them know, well, this is what our invention is about. This is how it's different. And that makes all the difference in the world to the examiner who wants to give you a patent. He wants to allow a patent for you, and just needs to understand exactly what your creation is about to help you get there.
Yeah, thank you. And that's all the time we have for tonight. Thank you to Valencia and Susie for their time and for their insights. I hope you all know what IP is now, and it is, and how it is part of the innovation ecosystem. We all wish you the best of luck in your brainstorm and design solutions for the first innovation challenge presented by Qualcomm. We'd like to thank all of our sponsors. Many of them will be leading experts for future episodes of this series. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Qualcomm, key sponsor BAE Systems, with the support of John Deere and the global healthcare company Abbott and its foundation, the Abbott Fund, and in collaboration with the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
Tune in next Tuesday, March 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for our next episode, Systems Design, Innovating for the Future and the First Innovation Challenge, Expert Education Series. engineers from the key sponsor, John Deere, will discuss using efficiency as a system design approach with virtual design, verification, dealing with failures, and to solve real-world problems. Thanks, and
good night. Thank you, and good night.